Well, okay. Well, it's good to see everybody on the holiday weekend. It's a smaller crowd, but that's not surprising. A lot of people have things to do tonight. I found the another copy of the set-aside prayer at Drop the Rock, and I'm going to say that now before we start our study. Lord, today help me set aside everything I think I know about you, everything I think I know about myself, everything I think I know about others, and everything I think I know about my own recovery for a new experience in myself, a new experience in my fellows, and my own recovery. And I really like that prayer, and I say it a lot. Tonight we are starting chapter 4 on We Agnostics. We spent quite a few weeks getting to this point. We're going to read two pages today that are so powerful that I was reading it. I study for each time I do this, even though I've done this these pages maybe 20, 30 times already, more maybe. But I always get something out of it, and I try to see something new, and I try to see it as if you were new and had never been here before. And I really think that these pages, if you sat down with somebody when they were completely defeated and you read them with them, it would really make a powerful statement about what they need to do. When they get to We Agnostics on chapter 4, they've covered 43 pages plus the doctor's opinion in the book to have us really understand our first step and experience it so that we can take the first step. We Agnostics is where we're going to take the second step, where we're going to be willing to believe, and we're going to talk about God in We Agnostics. And then when we read How It Works, which Richard read tonight, we're ready. We come with belief, and we come with admission that we're powerless over alcohol and admission that our lives are unmanageable. So when you come to How It Works, you have really made a lot of admittance to yourself about your plight and where you are and what you need to do, and you've changed your mind about your relationship with God and We Agnostics, and then you're ready to read and do How It Works, which is steps 3 through 4, and then 5 through 11 is into action. So they're getting us ready now. On this chapter, We Agnostics, I'd read it on my own, and we talked about it yesterday, and I said, boy, this is great stuff. I really like this. But I didn't really put it to work in my life. I didn't understand it until I really studied it and listened to other people go through it and see the power of these pages. This was written by people who are not theologians. They were alcoholics. They were only sober a few years. They used information from the Oxford group. They took information from the Sermon on the Mount, 1 Corinthians, Book of James. They had Reverend Shoemaker from the Calvary Church and the Oxford group help them with putting this information together. But it's so well written. Every time I read it, I gain something. And so you can be sober 23 years or one day. You read this, and it's powerful. We Agnostics, agnostic, I didn't understand till I listened to Joe and Charlie, is those without knowledge of God. And it's a powerful, and it says we agnostics. Now, there may have been people who weren't agnostic who came to AA, but I haven't met too many of them. They're not talking about people who pray to God or believe in Jesus or Moses or Muhammad or whatever. They're talking about people who pray and believe and think they believe, but then they lead a self-centered life and they've managed their own lives and they've never used the power that they're praying to. And the power has always been available to them, but they've never used it because they've blocked it through their self-centeredness. And so that's why we read yesterday why they say a religious denomination is good, and people may believe that they have faith, but it was faith that didn't work. And so you have to have a faith that works. And that's the how the steps gives you a faith that works, which is called a spiritual awakening, which is a relationship with God and your Creator. And so We Agnostics is designed to help us change our ideas about God and our relationship with God. And the stuff in here is so powerful because I think it's I don't know if it's unique to AA, but it's unique the way it's put together. And I think the way they wrote this chapter is why AA is still here today, because they made it a spiritual program, not religious. And the way they discuss the relationship with your Creator, no one can argue with it. So it says, in the preceding chapters, you have learned something of alcoholism. So they hope you've learned something about alcoholism. And it says, we hope that they've made clear the distinction between the alcoholic and the non-alcoholic to you, the reader. So you're reading this book, you're here today, you're reading it. Do you know the distinction between an alcoholic and a non-alcoholic? And then there's this line, it says, if when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely, or if when drinking you have little control over the amount you take, you're probably alcoholic. Now the or is what bothers me, because it means you can have one or the other. And so we know if you can't quit drinking entirely, you're an alcoholic, right? Because if you can't quit drinking and you keep drinking, then you have no choice over whether you're going to drink or not. And that's the obsession of the mind, and that makes you powerless over alcohol. So if you can quit drinking without on your own, then you don't need this. And then it says, if when drinking you have little control over the amount you take, you're probably alcoholic. So there's the choice. Can I have the power of choice over alcohol? Or do I have power over control over how much I drink? And the control is the allergy of the body we talk about, the phenomenon of craving once you put in your body. And we've talked about the obsession to drink sober. And obsession is a irrational thought that cannot be replaced by willpower. It cannot be replaced by irrational thinking. It's an obsession that dominates the mind, where willpower won't work. So it's not something that you have no power to get over when you have the obsession on your own. So choice and control, if that's the case, then it says you may be suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. We can go to a lot of meetings, a lot of discussion meetings, and you'll never really hear this. You never really hear them say, you know, you have an illness which only a spiritual experience is going to conquer this. And so what does that mean? It means that you will never get choice over whether you're going to drink or not, and then the control issue, you never recover. So, but that doesn't come into play if you don't drink, right? So if you don't drink, you don't have to worry about the obsession. Worry about the phenomenon of craving. So if you have the obsession of the mind and then you can't control how much you drink, then you need a spiritual experience. So then people are wondering, what does a spiritual experience mean? It means, and they're going to go in and discuss it in more detail. And so the question you would have as a reader is, what is the spiritual experience? Well, you're experiencing a spirit. You're experiencing a relationship with your Creator. So it says, the one who feels he is an atheist or agnostic, such an experience seems impossible. These are people who don't believe that God exists, or they have no relationship with God. It seems impossible. But to continue as he is means disaster. Well, disaster is not good, by the way. So if you're going on, if you have this disease and you continue as you are, it's a disaster. Which means that if you're the ship, you're going to sink. And it says, especially if he's an alcoholic of the hopeless variety. So when is an alcoholic not hopeless? So you would ask yourself, when is an alcoholic not hopeless? Well, an alcoholic who isn't hopeless is when he hasn't come to believe that they're powerless over alcohol and that their lives are unmanageable. but they could certainly be alcoholic, right? And then they don't think they're hopeless because they still have a plan. But we know that it's a hopeless disease, so the sentence could be looked at a lot of ways. If you're a real alcoholic, you are hopeless. But whether you realize it or not are two different things. And so, but to continue as he is means disaster. Now here's where I think they explain the line that I just read. I hadn't realized it for a long time. I would read this to be doomed to an alcoholic death or to live on a spiritual basis are not always easy alternatives to face. And I'd say, well, you know, that seems kind of silly, right? You're either going to die an alcoholic death or live on a spiritual basis. Well, gee, I mean, how could it not be an easy alternative to face, right? But when you go back to Richard read How It Works tonight, and it talks about people who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. And I've gone to meetings where people wonder, well, what does it mean to be constitutionally incapable of being honest? And then on page, I believe it's 25, in the first paragraph when there's a solution, it says, we had come to believe in the hopelessness and futility of life as we had been living it. So if I come to believe in the hopelessness and futility of life as I've been living it, then if I'm approached by someone who has solved the problem, all I have to do is pick up the simple kit of spiritual tools laid at my feet. All right, so if I've come to believe that my life is hopeless and futile, and I remember the moment when I couldn't convince myself it wasn't anymore, and I got down on my knees and I asked God to help me, and I was willing to go to any length, whatever I needed to do, I just didn't want to live like I was anymore. And then if you're constitutionally incapable of being honest with yourselves, you can't see that you have a hopeless and futile life. And therefore, you're incapable of doing the rest of the program. It says people cannot or will not do the simple program or constitutionally capable. They're constitutionally incapable of being honest about their hopelessness and futility of life as they've been living it. And then that ties together to this line, to be doomed to an alcoholic death or to live on a spiritual basis are not always easy alternatives to face. See, I looked at it as the alternatives, but it's not easy to see the alternatives if you're not defeated. In other words, if I don't see that I have a hopeless and futile life and I don't see the choices, then I don't have to face them. So in other words, if you convince yourself that you're not doomed to an alcoholic death and you can fix this thing and you don't need to live on a spiritual basis, then you don't have to face those alternatives. But if you've come to believe in the hopelessness and futility of life and you understand that to go one means disaster, then you can face the alternatives. And so I think that's where the true defeat, the true moment of grace comes into me when I could see that I couldn't go on like this and I had to live a different way. I just couldn't go on and I didn't want to go on anymore and I had to live a different way. And it was so powerful to me that John remembers when I came back, I really wanted to do anything to try to have a better life. And I didn't know what to do, but I was trying to do anything they told me. And I met a lot of neat people and I'm here today. And so that's the problem, I think. People don't see the two alternatives. There are only two alternatives. There's not a third one. And they can't see it because they haven't completely admitted their hopeless and futile life. And so that's why the first step is so important. But you can't make anybody live their first step. Now, I just talked to somebody in this group just can't stop drinking, and their significant other just texted me, and she's leaving them, and she's going away. And I said, well, that's all you can do. And I said, until this person really takes the first step, there's no way to help them. And the mistake I've made with new people is I think they've taken the first step because they come here, but that's not always true. And so I think reading the book with them from the beginning is probably the only way for them to answer the questions and see if they're truly defeated. And then the other thing that I think kills a lot of us, you can be sober a while, is you start to think that you're not a hopeless and futile life living it on your own. and you start to take more control of your life, and you stop doing all the things you know you need to do to let God manage and direct your thinking. So, I don't know. I've gotten a lot out of those two paragraphs. They're very powerful. And it should really, some of you could read at every meeting. But it isn't so difficult. About half of our original fellowship were exactly that type. But I think almost everybody who comes in here, if they truly had knowledge of God, they wouldn't be here. They would be living a spiritual life. And I think there are people who don't have knowledge of God, who don't live a spiritual life, who could use the steps, but they're not alcoholics, so they don't drink when they feel bad. They may just yell at their spouse or gamble or do something else, but they don't drink. And then when we drink, we can't control how much we drink, and we get in a lot of trouble, and we get in this spiral. So for us, I think that's why God gave us the steps to give to the world, because we'd be desperate enough to do it. You see, who can or will not do this? People are constantly capable of seeing that they're hopeless and futile life running it as they've been. And that's really hard. And so it says, but we had to face the fact that here it is again, I must find the spiritual basis of life or else. Now, the or else is not good. It's just not good. But here's the thing. There are people who read this who are in the rooms and who don't really believe it. You know how you know?
Yep.
They're not doing the steps. They don't like this meeting. He talks about God too much. He talks too much. I don't want to listen. I don't want to learn this stuff. Well, that's fine. You know, it's not. I don't want to do the steps. I want to do a step a week or a month. I don't need a sponsor yet. I don't need to go to a meeting every night. You know, it's endless. And it says, some of us, we tried to avoid the issue, hoping against hope. How do you hope against hope that you're not a true alcoholic? I don't know how you do that, but they're hoping against hope. Well, because if they're a true alcoholic, then what? Then they have a hopeless and futile life. Then they have to have a spiritual experience. Then they're doomed to alcoholic death or living a spiritual death. So we hope to hope we're not that bad. And there are probably people, I don't know if I did, I can't remember that far away, but whether I was this bad or not, I don't even think I just wanted to have a life that had some peace and serenity, and I was willing to do anything. And I still feel that way. It says, cheer up. Our experience shows you need not be disconcerted. Now, here's a good line. It says, if a mere code of morals or a better philosophy of life were sufficient to overcome alcoholism, many of us would have recovered long ago. So a code of morals is where you decide what your behavior should be, and you want it to be good and live up to a standard. And, or a better philosophy of life. Now, I relate this to, I hear people say, I want good orderly direction. It sounds great, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. I mean, how could it not sound good? It makes a lot of sense. The problem is, that's me deciding what my new code of morals, my new philosophy of life, and I'm going to do better. Because the good orderly direction is great if God's the director. And that's the problem, that I can have good orderly direction in my own mind and really screw up my life and make a lot of bad decisions. And I've done that. And I could do that today. So my direction must start with God. And that's the 11th step, carry a vision of God's will in all of our activities. How can I best serve thee? So the smear code of morals or philosophy of better, it can be sufficient to overcome alcoholism if it's based on a direction of God. But if it's on my direction, I can't do it. Because it says, we found that such codes and philosophies did not save us, no matter how much we tried. Did anybody go to work and say, I'm not going to get pissed off today. I'm not going to carry on. I'm not going to get upset. They're not going to bother me. It's going to be great. 10:30, oh my. You know, oh, look what they're doing. It's a mess. Anybody do that? Anybody say, I'm not going to get upset with her. I'm not going to say this. I'm not going to judge. Anybody try not to judge at a meeting? It's just, we can't do it. It says we could wish to be moral. We could wish to be philosophically comforted. I don't know what that means, but it sounds good. In fact, we could will these things with all our might, but here it is. The needed power wasn't there. And that's what I have to understand. I can try to do good orderly direction. I can try to do well each day, but without God and seeking God's direction, I'm not going to make it. My life is going to be unmanageable. And this ties into page 43. At the last paragraph, my defense must come from a higher power. So they're really getting you ready to change your idea about God and your relationship with God. And so my human resources will never be able to fix my life without God. So what do they say? It says, lack of power, that was my dilemma. I did not have power to have a better philosophy of life, to overcome alcoholism. I didn't have a power to have a better code of morals and follow through in it. I didn't have a power to live a spiritual life on my own. Now, they don't talk now about selfishness, self-centeredness is the root of our problem. They don't talk about the spiritual malady yet, but they're going to get ready in a few pages. And so the third part, there are three parts to the first step. The first one is the powerless over alcohol. What makes me powerless over alcohol? It doesn't say I'm an alcoholic, by the way. Does it say I'm an alcoholic at all in the steps? It doesn't. It says powerless over alcohol. I'm powerless over alcohol. Alcohol has power over me, so I need a power in my life, and that power is God. And what makes me powerless over alcohol is that I can't control how much I drink, and I can't keep from drinking, so I'm powerless. Now, I think that's a powerful admittance, which means the let in, but I really have to take the second part of that first step. I have to understand that my life is unmanageable. Well, it's certainly unmanageable because I can't stop drinking or using, right? But then it's unmanageable because everything's a mess. Now, the thing they left out there, we're going to write another copy of the book. Chris, make sure that's on the site, okay?
Right.
We're going to put, our lives are unmanageable by me. You see, I made my life unmanageable. Now, a lot of people come here and their lives are unmanageable, and they'll give you a list of 10 people that made it that way. And they're emphatic, and there may even be 20. But there's always one. There's always one that made their life unmanageable. But I made my life unmanageable. And that's the spiritual malady. And that's the only thing that can be fixed spiritually, because it says if we straighten out spiritually, we straighten out mentally and physically. If I could straighten out the management of my life, then the obsession to drink won't come into play. And then it won't matter that I have an allergy to alcohol. So that we have to treat the spiritual malady, because remember, alcohol is just a symptom. And I don't have any power, that's my dilemma. And I don't have any power to live. The dilemma is that I need power, and I don't have it, and I don't know how to get it. So everybody could say, I need power, I want to live a spiritual life, but I don't know how to achieve that. So the book says, that's our dilemma, but guess what, they give you the solution. It says we had to find a power by which we could live. We're not talking about drinking anymore. After page 44, we're not talking about alcohol anymore. We're talking about alcoholism. And I need a power to live. A power to live. And it had to be greater than me. Now, I will admit that if I'm completely hopeless and futile, right? And I know that my life's an effing mess. And I need help. Then I will... That idea makes a lot of sense to me. So why is it, that's why it's on page 45 and it's not on page 1. It's here now because you've looked at this, and if your experience tells you that, you know this. And it says obviously. So obviously you need to find a power greater than you because you couldn't fix it. So where and how are we to find the power? That's a good question, isn't it? See, the book is written in a very interesting style. They tell you the problem, they tell you the solution, the next line. They do it through the whole book. So it says, well, that's exactly what this book is about. That's why we study the book. That's why I keep going over and over. I get find more, because it's how this book, the main object of this book is to help me find a power greater than myself, which will solve my problem. So I have to constantly read this, study this, and follow the directions. That's all I need to do. And if I follow this path, then I have a relationship with God and I have a power how I can live today. My life is really, really good. And I don't deserve it. I was really feeling so much gratitude today. I can't explain it. And even though it's Memorial Day weekend, my son died, and probably go see the go to the grave tomorrow, but I still felt tremendous gratitude just for the peace I have and everything that's I've been able to do with my life. And I just felt good about God's power in my life. I can't explain it. It's a feeling. It's an experience. And it says, a power greater than myself which will solve my problem. Now, I'd read this a lot and I didn't understand it because I thought, well, I'm going to get a power greater than myself which is going to help me solve my problems. Mm-hmm. But that's not what it says. The power solves the problem. My role was I created problems and I saw them as problems. And then I would try to fix them with God's help, but I couldn't. I need God to give me the power which will solve the problem. And our problem, it just says one problem. So we only have one problem. And the problem is I don't have any power to live. And so God solves that by giving me the power. If I access God, I will have power to handle anything that happens. It says, if we stay close on page 68, it's worth reading again. On page 68, this is a contract with God. I'm in the world, the second paragraph, I'm in the world to play the role he assigns, just to the extent that I do as I think he would have me, and humbly rely on him, I can enable me to match calamity with serenity. So what that tells me is that if I have access to this power, and I play the role God gives me, not the role I give myself, and I do as I think he would, and humbly rely on him, I can handle any situation. It's just a situation, it's not a problem. So that's a tremendous promise. And I really like Chuck Chamberlain. He said, we only have one problem and one solution. Sounds crazy, isn't it? Everybody in this room, we only have one problem, conscious separation from God. With my mind, I consciously will separate and play God in areas of my life, and then I'm on my own. And the solution is conscious contact with God. And so this means we have written a book which we believe to be spiritual as well as moral. And it means, of course, that we're going to talk about God. So I'm going to end here because now we're on the God book. This is not a book about drinking. This is a book about a relationship with God. Why? Because God is what we call the power. And I need access to the power. And so, powerful, powerful stuff. Now, I was thinking about the Michelangelo Sistine Chapel. I've talked about that a lot. And I looked at it wrong. I saw that today. I'm admitting I'm honest. In the Sistine Chapel, which is not a big room, it's not a big chapel. It's supposed to be the Pope's private little chapel. It's not big. It's maybe 100 feet. Maybe 150 feet by 50. And then the Pope would enter on this end of the room, and you enter through that, the other people enter through there. And when you stand at the back where the Pope is, Michelangelo painted the story of the scriptures on the wall. Mm-hmm. And the center one, where your eye is drawn to, is God and Adam. And God giving Adam the finger. Well, it's true. It's very powerful. And actually, when we went, they had cleaned it up, so it wasn't dirty anymore. They did all the... And it's so powerful. Now, before I get to the finger part, the next paddle is Eden, and they're great. Everything's great. It's beautiful. And then the one next to it is where they decide that they don't need to be in the Garden of Eden. It's not good enough. And they live outside. And then I said, this is AA. Because we can be in the Garden of Eden with God. And then we decide it's not good enough, so we play God, and we leave it all the time. And how do we go back and forth? But then the finger business, and I actually bought, stop it. It's true. God's giving Adam the finger. And it's not this finger. It's this finger.
Thank you.
So, thanks for the demo.
You understand.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
All right. Was that a key? That was a key critical information. Dino's happy now. But the thing I realized is I said, well, God's putting himself inside of all of us, right?
Yeah.
But now I see it as Adam's reluctant to connect. He keeps that space. What keeps us from touching God? Because we're the ones, I think, that keep that space. And that's what alcoholics do. And we make the space really big. Now, I may be wrong, I have no idea. But it just occurred to me that there are two ways of looking at that. And then why don't we connect? And then the next paddle's the same thing. We're okay with God, that's heaven. And then we want to move away, it's not good enough. And then we complain about God. And things aren't fair, right? And you know, now Eve has cellulite, you know, and Adam's got issues, you understand? And so that's powerful stuff. So that's enough, it's recorded, so stop. We'll pick it up next week with from page 45. We're gonna spend several weeks on this chapter. There's so much powerful spiritual information. I know people like Phil sitting behind me, they just love this stuff. The more I read it, the more powerful it helps me connect to God.